CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Akın Erdemir, former legislator, parliamentarian in Turkey, now a senior fellow of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, to help me understand the news from Asia Minor, from Turkey, especially from Mr. Erdogan's desk. Akın, a very good day to you. I begin with the overall concern expressed by the financial markets in this headline: Turkish inflation jump wipes out most of real interest rate. Explanation: Turkey's inflation climbed more than expected in July to nearly the level of the central bank's benchmark interest rate, diminishing the chances of an early cut in borrowing costs sought by the president. I mention that because this in some fashion connects to the president's activities that you highlight with your colleagues about the president's campaign to, as you characterize it, disenfranchise pro-Kurdish voters. This is a long-standing dispute between Mr. Erdogan and the Kurds of several countries, Iraq, Iran, the neighborhood. However, I'm puzzling now because this seems at odds with Mr. Erdogan's said-to-be heroic phone call to the president of Tunisia, pleading for democracy to be established again. And we will speak of this, but that country now is in limbo about whether there is or isn't democracy, with the parliament being dismissed. So Mr. Erdogan is of two sides of the coin with democracy. At the same time, is this all meant to be a distraction from that inflation rate jump? Good evening to you, Akın.
Good evening, and always a pleasure to join you, John. Now, Turkey is really going through hard times. On the one hand, the country is back to double-digit inflation. You know, consumer inflation is around 19%, but wholesale inflation is above 40%, which makes many suspect that Turkey's official statistical institute is not really giving an accurate picture of the real inflation at the consumer level. And given Erdogan has the economic crisis to deal with, and then exacerbated by refugee inflows, there are around 500,000 Afghan refugees, and we still continue seeing new waves of refugees coming in, triggering an anti-refugee sentiment across the political spectrum. And add to that the ravaging forest fires and the Erdogan government's lack of capacity to deal with them. So, yes, Erdogan needs a distraction more than ever. He needs conspiracy theories. He needs outside forces to point the finger to. And in this moment of crisis, he has, you know, two tactics at hand. One is to crack down on Turkey's second largest opposition party, which is the pro-Kurdish People's Democratic Party, namely the HDP. And Erdogan and his ultra-nationalist partners have for years been criminalizing this political party, seeing it as really a key obstacle to their hold on power. And as we speak, there is a constitutional court case against this party pushed by Erdogan and his ultra-nationalist allies, and they're trying to shutter the party in the run-up to 2023 presidential and parliamentary elections. And meanwhile, as you said, there are these developments in Tunisia whereby the president of Tunisia, Kais Saied, has basically abolished the parliament. And we see Erdogan reaching out to President Saied, urging him to respect the parliament and democracy. Now, that is quite ironic at a time when Erdogan himself has been trying to shutter Turkey's second largest party and has already removed from office elected officials, including lawmakers, mayors, and city councillors. So Erdogan is the last person to preach democracy to another flawed democracy, but I guess he doesn't see really the irony in him being the one to raise this issue.
I want to speak first to the Kurds. There are a library of issues here, Akın, and you're good to take me through this maze. I want to first speak of the Kurds because the U.S. very much depended upon the Kurdish presence during the Iraq tragedy, and still does. However, the Kurds in Turkey are said to be completely at odds with Mr. Erdogan. Is that a popular opinion in the non-Kurdish parts of Turkey to oppose Erdogan, or is this an isolated party that cannot grow? How to regard it in the parliament?
Now, Turkey's Kurdish issue is really very complicated, but in a nutshell, over the years, we have seen Turkey's more religiously oriented conservative Kurds side with Erdogan's Islamist Justice and Development Party. And then we have seen more secular oriented, more nationalist oriented Kurds to side with Turkey's, you know, long line of pro-Kurdish parties. And lately, Turkey's pro-Kurdish party, the HDP, has succeeded in making inroads to other communities. So they now not only receive votes from Turkey's other ethnic and religious minorities, but also some votes from Turkey's pro-secular and progressive constituents. So that's how they became the first ever pro-Kurdish party to clear Turkey's 10% nationwide electoral threshold to make it to the parliament en masse, and thereby undercutting Erdogan's parliamentary majority. And this development, of course, you know, made them the target of not only Erdogan, but his ultra-nationalist coalition partners. Now, the Kurdish issue is further complicated by the fact that in Syria, you know, Kurdish-led Syrian Democratic Forces became the key partners that the United States depended on to defeat the Islamic State. And for the Erdogan government, this was an unwelcome development because he and his ultranationalist allies see the Syrian Kurdish-led Syrian Democratic Forces as one and the same with the PKK, a designated terrorist entity fighting an insurgency against the Turkish government for over 4 decades. So in Syria, too, we see some of Turkey's anti-Kurdish policies spilling across the border. And hence, since 2016, we have seen 3 cross-border operations by the Turkish military and its Syrian Islamist allies targeting Washington's Syrian Kurdish-led allies in Syria. So this is a transnational issue. It's a very complicated issue. But Erdogan happens to be on the wrong side of the equation wherever we look at.
Let's speak in particular of a man who's been ordered released by the Turkish Constitutional Court, a deputy of the pro-Kurdish HDP. His name, and help me, Gurgaloglu. Yes, and he is speaking for his party, but Erdogan jailed him. Was that a defeat for Erdogan to jail him and have him released?
Yes, it was a defeat. And, you know, lawmaker Gergerlioğlu's profile is very telling, and that's actually the reason why he became a target, because he comes from a religious conservative background, and he's not Kurdish himself. And he became quite an outspoken human rights defender among the ranks of the HDP, the pro-Kurdish party in Turkey. And hence, he has played a significant role in attracting the religious vote, both Turkish and Kurdish, from Erdogan's ruling party. And it didn't take long for Erdogan to target him on really bogus charges, on charges that, you know, he retweeted a news piece on the Kurdish peace process as proof that he was propagating terrorism. And they sent him to jail, lifting his parliamentary immunity. You know, it was really a scandalous case. But it didn't take long for the Constitutional Court, under immense public pressure, to reverse the ruling. So now Gergerlioğlu is back in office, continuing his human rights work and undercutting Erdogan's, support among the religious conservative public in Turkey.
More alarming is there's been gunplay. At least two HDP members gunned down, perhaps by Erdogan's forces, perhaps by just disorder in the election process. Is this something new, shooting or killing with weapons, members of the HDP?
Now, what's not new is the political pressure on the HDP and its support base. But what's, I think, an alarming new development is the increasing pace of violent vigilante attacks provoked by both Erdogan and his ultra-nationalist coalition partners and their mouthpiece media. So we have recently seen some targeted killings of HDP members and targeted attacks at HDP chapters around Turkey. To make matters worse, we have recently seen a brutal massacre of a Kurdish family of seven in central Turkey by, again, ultra-nationalists. And most observers warn that such vigilante attacks, such racially motivated attacks, are simply a result of the ongoing smear campaigns that portray Turkey's Kurds and pro-Kurdish politicians as terrorists, as enemies of the nation. So once you criminalize and smear the country's second largest opposition party and its support base, and there are over 6 million voters who supported the HDP, then this is really a recipe for disaster and intercommunal clashes.
At this point, you and your colleagues refer to HDP as a big tent coalition. Is it capable of mounting a challenge to Mr. Erdogan in the presidential election next, or overwhelming his forces in parliament? Is it that large yet?
Now, I think if history is any guide, we have to look at the HDP's track record in the 2019 municipal elections, when Erdogan and his ultra-nationalist coalition partners lost in almost all metropolitan cities. And what led to that defeat was the strategic role the HDP played by supporting the big tent opposition bloc in Turkey, which comprises center-right, centrist, and center-left parties. So Erdogan knows that the HDP is basically the kingmaker in Turkey. If they lend their support to the opposition bloc, it gives them enough support base to defeat Erdogan's Islamist ultranationalist coalition. And what Erdogan fears is that in 2023, presidential and parliamentary elections, the HDP can again play such a kingmaker role and end Erdogan's, you know, by that point, you know, over 20 years of rule. And hence the ongoing lawsuit against the HDP to shutter the party, and hence all these criminalization attempts and smear campaigns that triggers vigilante attacks against the party. So at this point, Erdogan is really is willing to play politics in a dirty way while preaching Tunisia to respect, you know, parliament and separation of powers and the rule of law.
Ekin Erdemir, a former member of the Turkish parliament, senior director of the Turkey program at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. We're going to North Africa. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.